as is only right and proper when there's news of natural disasters, political intrigue, an ongoing war against a powerful alien race, and of course, most probably some new form of alien life discovered somewhere in the galaxy, it's only right that Hutton Orbital News starts with the subject that's on everyone's lips. Yes, the Sticky Winks Bowl, the final of which was last weekend. After a hectic season left only two teams in the running for the top spot in the league, and a series of rather fantastically convenient draws, the final match of the season was played out between these two stalwarts of the Sticky Winks Arena. Normally, of course, you mention Sticky Winks and the top winkers that play for the teams. Yes, contracts change hands for billions of dollars. And unless the person you're talking to knows their spudger from their squidger and their squop from a boondock, you'll get a very blank look. It was all brought into the limelight recently after Imperial pop sensation Haberdasher Fast, famous for galactic best-selling songs such as the upbeat Empire pop hit Stitch in Time brackets Saves Nine Worlds brackets, and her balladic Warp Speed Weaver, started dating one of the best sticky winkers in the galaxy. Purported to have been dating him for a number of months, at this year's final she brought her entourage, including mum, stylist, and spare stylist in case the stylist wasn't capturing this season's style, and of course, a ghostwriter, to the VIP box at the tournament. It definitely looked like she'd been boning up on the rules of Sticky Winks, a game as far evolved from Tiddlywinks as the modern frameshift drive is from a good old-fashioned Bolton & Watts steam engine. And yes, it is designed to be played in zero-G. The purpose of your game is to get your Sticky Wink to flip off the wall of the arena using your spudger and into one of the many cups stuck around the arena. Your Sticky Wink is indeed sticky, magnetically sticky, so get it just right and you can cup your spudge Sticky Wink in a single blitz. Of course, your opposition are at liberty to try and squamp your Sticky Wink and gazump you in that cup, whereupon you're welcome to boondock your next Sticky Wink to unstick their Sticky Wink and take a double. The player with the most tiddlies at the end of a stick-off is declared the winner, and of course you automatically lose if you have an eye taken out by a flying spudge Sticky Wink, as it's near impossible to win with only one eye open. Anyway, now that's as clear as the spherical arena in which it's played. In the final match, the Quantum Winkers played off against the Saskatchewan Squidgers for the honour of being the tiddliest Sticky Winkers in the galaxy, and all eyes were on star winker Cosmo Flickstar. Well, they would have been if his new girlfriend wasn't in the stands, which she was, which meant no one was watching. But at the end of the tiddle-off, he toddled off with the most tiddlies, the trophy and, of course, the girl, who, by extreme coincidence, put tickets for her next galactic tour on sale an hour after the match finished.
I have no idea what that was all about. So instead, let's get some real news. Coming up later in the show, we've got an in-depth analysis by Commander Witherspoon about the situation in Rhea. No, we're not reporting on the Rhea itself, but a funny thing happened to Witherspoon on the way to the Rhea area. Commander Witherspoon, Galactic News Digester, and all-round incisive news hound, ably assisted by the ever-talented artistic and vocal talents of Beetlejuice, came a little unstuck while preparing this week's Galnet News Digest. It turns out that doing the research on Rhea can lead to some unintended consequences when preparing the visuals and working on wording for the show. Firstly, pulling up his Universal Cartographics Encyclopedia and using, as he does, as he's got a great voice searching, he asks for a location for Rhea. A wall opened, a torch popped out, and put crosshairs exactly where you suspect it might have. He then castigated the system and suggested that the Rhea he was looking for had an H in it, whereby it called up a holographic projection of the solar system with a really big arrow pointing at Saturn and the number 5 in Roman numerals. Switching from voice control to manual data entry, he was able to re-query his galactic database, skip over the references to the mother of Zeus, and instead get it to plot a route over to the home of President-elect Winters. With Beetlejuice unable to accompany them and submitting her content via Gal Mail this week, he pinged off a quick message simply saying, "Gone to Rhea, back soon, need pictures." What Beetlejuice drew was stunning. But wholly inappropriate, as emu lookalikes and natural disasters don't really make for good bedfellows. Or indeed for the subject of high-end galactic art. Was a really good piece of art though. Anyway, you understand the confusion that naming of the place aside, Wotherspoon has grasped the problem in Rhea with both hands and is subjecting it to detailed investigation for this very show.
Week 80 of Too Hot, Too Messy finally saw Commanders pass 120,000 deliveries. And for the stats nerds, we think that is about 30% of what we think might possibly be out there. Numbers were up again last week, and for the first time in a month, we delivered more than 1,000 deliveries in a week. This still leaves us with a four-week average of just under 900, which is trending upward for the first time in a month also. Ask yourself a question. When did you last deliver a mug? Hutton is an expansion, which means that gin production should be 21 units, although this has not been confirmed. Things are picking up. There were three Hutton runs this week, which is lucky because we were running low on curly whirlies, crit sticks and bingo books. One more week and we might not have had made it. Dead Meat GF did 1 hour 24 minutes 6 seconds. Steve King 1 hour 26 minutes 1 second. And number 7, 1 hour 31 minutes 55 seconds.
Following up news of the disaster in Rhea from earlier, and later in the show, we've got a natural disaster of a slightly smaller scale over in Hutton Space. And no, we don't mean King Hanky. He's had enough disasters in the last few weeks to have earned the week off. We've had reports that Ben Greener Astrophysics Expedition over in the Rensees, the local outpost of the Green Party of Samini, has signalled a major local alert and asked for all ships in the vicinity to send assistance. Ben Greener, based on the ice world of Narensis 3C, a planet with not much to speak about, no atmosphere, no warmth, definitely no seismic activity, is the perfect place for an astrophysics lab. Uncluttered views of the sky, nothing between you looking up and up, other than the more up. It was when investigating the signals from as far back as around 300,000 years after the Big Bang that the Saminians spotted something quite disconcerting. In fact, quite a lot of things that were disconcerting. Things that weren't in the background. They were in the foreground. Sort of rocky, icy things. The kind of rocky, icy things that weren't passing across their field of vision, but were taking up more and more of it every second. Sounding an alert and climbing into their waiting science adder, all science needs adders, can't do science without a little adder on hand, turning the shield up to OMG incoming meteor storm, and sitting there listening to the meteors pinging off the hull and the shields, praying to whatever deity the Green Party of Saminians pray to, and none of them were larger than a Type 9, the Saminians emerged from their adder to find a scene of utter devastation. The zero-G wheelie bin had taken a direct hit. The solar panels looked like Swiss cheese, and there was an enormous rock embedded in the top of the building next to the radio telescope. They sent an appeal to everyone in the area to assist, as they can't get into their difficult maths problems, or their weird wibbly background radiation maps, without clearing the debris out of the way. Whether the pilots are in their bronzite chondrite or their piceous cobbles, or partial to the odd mesosiderite, there are plenty to be found in the area for topping up your mining materials. Oh, and if you could bring some emergency shelters, a new coffee machine, and a packet of hobnobs for the scientists, please, they'd be very grateful.
The Teon Isla Ship Graveyard. Fabled orbital resting place of ships from long ago. Picked over by scavengers, hunted by pirate ships, and the go-to place if you want to get rid of a hot ship quick, with no questions asked. In recent years, the question has been, but where did it go? We've speculated on this before. Maybe it was there. Maybe it was just not marked on any maps. Maybe it was never there and just a fable from old spacers with nothing better to do than sip their space rum and tell tall tales. Recent investigations have turned up a new theory, though. Eager students from the University of Tion Isla, one of the older established universities outside Seoul, have submitted a paper for their final year thesis that turns up some rather interesting facts. They've been cross-referencing ship travel log data against possible known locations for the shipyard, and managed to find a 12-year-old log which might be at the heart of discovering what happened to the ship graveyard. All those aging cobras, the venerable boa, rarities like the Moray Starboat, and the gecko. It appears that around 12 years ago, a space dredger clan ship passed through the Tion Isla system. It didn't communicate with any ships or stations in the area, as is normal for dredger clans, but it did pause in system for a couple of weeks before moving on. By studying gravitational fields in the area and a number of rocks, students have determined that around the time of its departure, the total mass of the system dropped by a few million tons, and the gravitational wake caused by the movement of the dredger had a pronounced effect as it left the system and passed very close to a local moon's rings, an effect that was far bigger than the one it caused when it arrived. Did space dredgers hungry hippo the entire ship graveyard? Was the gaping maw of their behemoth swallowed ships whole? While there's no direct proof that there's a giant space barge laden with rarities chundering its way in a line away from Tion Isla, what scant evidence they've uncovered is enough to convince us. There are those that scoff at these claims, not least of which the Tion Isla Tourist Board, who rely on passing treasure hunter traffic for a good chunk of their revenue. A new set of treasure hunters have now set out. Restorationists, determined to find the dredger and using the laser equivalent of a big tin opener, politely request that the dredgers spill their guts and give back all the rarities that they've swallowed. For now, with no further information on the dredger clan, the behemoth has simply been labelled the Hungry, Hungry Hippo.
We've reported in previous weeks about the near fever pitch excitement over new ships in the galaxy, and more than a little speculation about what they might be, what purpose they'd serve, and whether any of them is a Panther Clipper LX. But our investigative team drew a complete blank about what, other than the Python Mark II, is coming. So instead, we sent them to the library to look up ships of the galaxy that no longer exist. As reported just one article ago, the obvious choice of go look in the Tion Isla ship graveyard, there's bound to be one there, not being a viable choice anymore. They've instead had to use a little bit of detective work, some creative thinking, and more than a little sketchbook squiggling to bring us some possibilities. First, a question from the Galactic Forums from a few years back, 3307 we think. Whatever happened to the Lacon Type 8? With the 6 being a go-to basic hauler for those wanting to do some heavy-duty trading on a budget, the 7 being Bertha the big-four-headed hauling beast, and the 9 being the venerable space cow, with variant 10 being the big, horny, angry space cow, it begs the question, why isn't there an 8? And could that be one of the ships coming soon? It appears that the Lacon Type 8 was designed to be the largest cargo-hauling ship possible to land on a medium pad. The problem? It was based on the Lacon MC-15 transporter. Loads of cargo space, but no frameshift drive. Capable of only travelling 0.1 light years before needing to be refuelled, it was about as useful as a chocolate teapot on a warm day. Okay, it was great at getting things to orbit, but that's it. Couldn't even travel as far as Hutton. Then, of course, there's the Gecko, the original go-to single-seater pirate ship. A bit of pew-pew for the piratical types. As other ships in the galaxy got bigger, tougher, and could defend themselves better against space pirates, the Gecko found itself outclassed and outgunned, with pirates switching to more accessible ships, and those that didn't scream, "Arr!" quite as hard as the Gecko, a victim of its own success. The Moray Starboat, with pilots cut off from landing on atmospheric worlds, or at least those with anything more than a tenuous atmosphere, it fell out of favour. Why spend all that money on a spaceship that can be a submarine when you can't actually use it to go fishing? Here at Hutton, we love to see a little more variety. The docking controller spends his or her day going Python, 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 Crate, Cobra, Muppet and an Anaconda. And just occasionally, they'd like something more interesting.
Things are going through somewhat of a... So that's what you get for forgetting Valentine's Day vibe in Hutton Space this week. A new record of 9 systems. Yeah, 9 systems are on Alvin's report. And we have 3 systems where things have gone a bit. More on those stories coming up. For the 5th week in a row, Ross 671 has held its ground, which appears to be 29, and fended off all comers to maintain its permagrip on the wooden spoon. Due to 2 wars, only 10% of system influence is up for grabs, and with an outbreak pending, things are looking set for it to defend its unbeaten run of apathy for a further week. Somewhere that we hadn't heard from in a while, Trepin has suffered somewhat of a plummet to 32, losing half of its influence in a month at the hands of the CIA, or player faction collective of independent agents, who challenge us to an election for control of the system. Hutton are currently 2-0 up, so head over Trepin and lend a hand to Commander Hankey, who has temporarily lost the use of one of his, to complete Hutton's collection of every starport in the system. In addition, Hutton have suffered an infrastructure failure, so ship in water purifiers and power generators to the large pads in Rukovishnikov Harbour and Menzies Inheritance and make a tidy profit. Another infrequent visitor to the report is Narnia, which fell 5 points in the week to 34. There's no particular threat, but each of the other factions have seen a rise at our expense. Bumbling along and enjoying yet another in a long series of public holidays is perhaps one reason that Barnard's Star never seems to do so well. This holiday seems to be in celebration of a 1-point rise to 35. Still, they do better than the other 6 factions, with 4 civil unrests, a civil war, a pair of infrastructure failures not adding any meaningful support to a pair of substantial busts. Hard to Move Epsilon Indy gained 2 points to end the week on 36. Not much is happening there, so now head right over and improve Hutton's fortunes a little more. We haven't seen Stein 2051 since November, but a steady decline since Christmas sees this system putting in an appearance on 37. Wolf 1481 and Hill Parsi are keeping each other company on 38. And just peeking its nose over the line by the 10th of 1 point is LP 525-39, but hey, when you have a record of 9 systems on the naughty step, each one counts, right? 36 Offiyuki and Wise 0855-0714 are suffering from infrastructure failures, so once you have sorted out Trepin's woes, head over there with any extras to really cash in. The fever in George's pants has subsided and the drought in Wolf 359 has been slaked. At the overachieving end of the Hutton systems table, we have just 2 systems above 60%, and we are in the final throes of expanding. Priorities this week are, if you want to truck something, boost Narensis, win the election in Trepin, and fix the infrastructure failures in Trepin, Wise 0855-0714, and 36 Offiyuki.